Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This program emanates from Kazoo, K-A-Z-U, FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 681, December the 24th, 1984. Just one more program on New Year's Eve next week, and then we tuck this year away. For better or for worse, we have survived the year of 1984. But as Ronald Reagan said at the time that he won the election, you ain't seen nothing yet. And with that grin on his face, we don't know what he means by that. So some of us will have to wait and see. Last week, I finished the broadcast number 680 with sections from a book called The Year of Armageddon. These sections were mailed to me by some friends in the East. The authors are Gordon Thomas, Max Morgan. It's from Granada Press, London, 1984. And I'm sure that Tom Davis out here in Capitola and Aptos will be carrying this book, and you can order from him. But the importance of this particular chapter has to do, that I've been referring to, has to do with Wild Bill Donovan, William Donovan, his close relationship to the Vatican, and how he was knighted with the highest order of the Vatican. He was the chief of the OSS and then helped form the Central Intelligence Agency. And from the OSS days, working closely with the Vatican and simultaneously with Nazis such as Heinrich Himmler and SS Karl Wolf and a whole bag of Nazis, Reinhard Galen and the aerospace Nazis, with that team of the Vatican and the Nazis and the American intelligence working together, when the war was over, the bonds got even closer because they had now to coexist with Russia, which the Vatican and the United States Pentagon never wanted anyway. And when the CIA was formed, we have our officials in Rome, it became the official espionage department of the United States government, but it also is a military branch, just as the Knights of Malta are a military branch. The sovereign military means military. If you look in the dictionary, sovereign is the supreme power and authority, and military relates to soldiers, arms, or war. Well, the Vatican doesn't have men in uniform that go out and fight, or tanks or aeroplanes, but it has the power over the members of the church to tell them, put on a uniform, to tell them, don't resist these people, to tell them to confess to political stories, even, or political actions that they're doing. And they are very much a part, the Vatican and the intelligence community, of running the world, and the intelligence community can tell the Pentagon and tell Congress what to vote because we are in danger here or there. They are the intellectual military, but they are the military because you can't get the uniforms on and the war going without the idea first of who are your friends or who are your enemies. So this book says that the Knights of Malta serves an ideal cover for William Casey, because he can operate under the organization of the Knights of Malta, and it becomes military from the Vatican, and Casey is the chief director of the CIA at home. The book says that both the CIA and the Vatican know that it is essential for the Pope never to be seen openly or aligning himself with the political aims of the CIA. And I talked about that last week. You can't be seen walking in and out of the door every day, the CIA briefing him. Once a week is enough. And it says, working through an order, such as the Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the country's leading Catholics and the CIA have a wider distance away from each other on an official level, but they can meet what you describe as casually and still get together, and they appear to keep the distance away from each other so that the Pope and the CIA station chief in Rome appear to have this distance so that they're not constantly having eye contact, but their messengers in between, those men that have been made Knights of Malta for the military part of protecting the Roman Church. The book says the CIA in Rome can brief the Pope once a week, and we talked about that. They can give him a weekly briefing, but the CIA would appear unacceptable if the station chief was in and out of the Pope's office every day. And I shared that with you last week, and we'll go on from there. It says, nowadays, William Casey doesn't have to fly to Rome. He doesn't even telephone the Vatican. He has powerful emissaries in the order, the Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order, who convey to John Paul in an informal way what the CIA wants the Vatican to do. William Casey, the CIA director, has a wide choice of messengers, thousands of more to send to Rome. Some of these knights are secret. We don't know who they are. I'd like to know who they are. Some are well-known, like Lee Iacocca's Spiroscuros, Robert Aplanap, that was the godfather of Richard Nixon's children. Nixon fly down to his place for briefings. Baron Hilton, and they mention three others in this book, maybe more later in the book, but in this chapter, William Simon, Robert Wagner, and Claire Luce. Now, those three are important, in addition to the ones I mentioned. But how does the Vatican and the policy of the military order of the Vatican affect domestic policy? William Simon is on the board of Helionetics, making the laser beams and Star Wars that the Russians do not want to get into with us, the weapons up in space. And he works with Edward Teller of the hydrogen bomb and Admiral Hayward. I mention these names many times, but every time he comes up with a new appointment or something that's pertinent, I want to repeat it till you really understand how far-reaching they are. William Simon was the former chairman of the Olympics, and I wonder what would have happened if the Soviet Union had appeared. And he recently, it seems, or was just exposed recently, as being on the team of Kissinger and Associates, working with Henry Kissinger and Lawrence Eagleburger in the Defense Department on that mysterious advisory group under the name of Henry Kissinger and Associates. Another member that they cite here is Robert Wagner, the former mayor of New York. He's the presidential envoy to the Holy See. Well, it was his law office of Mr. Wagner and Weiss and Simon Rifkin that set up the corporation papers for Otto von Bolschwing. The head of Reinhard Galen's domestic operations, when Galen went back to Germany to be working with the BND, Hitler's chief of intelligence in the East, Galen was knighted by the Vatican, and Robert Wagner, a knight, can travel and in the offices with Mr. Rifkin. Claire Luce, I have mentioned many times before, and again, it's in this book, that's why I'm bringing it up again, is a knight of Malta. Well, Henry Luce is long gone. He passed away a few years ago, but Lifetime and Fortune, Sports Illustrated, very political, and probably the two most political covers that I remember on the cover of Life magazine when Henry Luce was alive. One was the picture of Lee Harvey Oswald, the famous picture holding the rifle, and the shadows under his nose aren't the same as the shadows where the rifle falls. And Oswald saw it when he was alive and said that the picture was cut around and that it wasn't his body. It was his head and not his body. And the picture of Charles Manson at the time of the Manson killings to make appear that hippies and the deranged musician, the music cult group, killed Sharon Tate and Mr. Polanski and everyone in that house. Those two covers are very political statements because they are facts of disinformation. In other words, they're not facts at all. They're trying to project a thought in your mind that will be locked in there, which in fact isn't the way it was told, and it was done for a purpose of propaganda. Now, left out of the list, and I won't run down their politics because you know how important they are, and think of them as passing messengers in and out of the Vatican, as J. Peter Grace, William Buckley, James Buckley, Alexander Haig, Patrick Frawley, Jeremiah Denton, and we could go on for many, many more. This book says all these persons have a common bond. They have the ability to call the Vatican switchboard and ask to be connected to extension 3101 to the Pope's desk at any time they want. They are knighted. And of course, James Jesus Angleton is a knight of Malta. And you can't pass off the envoy to the Vatican, Mr. Wilson, William Wilson. Now, Wilson was formerly in charge of Ronald Reagan's personal finances. He's one of the two men that takes credit for sending the Vatican envoy from the United States to the Vatican, something this country hasn't done for many, many, many years. Robert Keith Gray is proud that he did that, and the second man who takes credit for having a Knight of Malta as ambassador to the Vatican is Senator Richard Lugar, the now head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who has close ties to the Vatican. Now, Mr. Lugar's name is controversial. I brought it up a while back on allegations that he was funded or picked up money from a Nazi in Switzerland at the time of Nixon's elections. I talked about that on broadcast number 600 in 1983 and also another broadcast on Senator Lugar. There were two that I did, two tapes on Lugar, one on 620 and one on 600, if you want to look them up. One story broke in the newspaper, the Senator Lugar bizarre scheme, Swiss bank and transfer of money. That was what it was titled. And it had to do with the signature of Horia Sima, a fugitive and Nazi war criminal living in Spain, who wrote a check that Lugar had picked up and put into a Swiss bank for funds for the Republican Party. There are many links of known Nazi war criminals, such as Licio Gelli and other Nazis, many of them funding the GOP and lined up with the GOP. Nicolae Mulock in the office of Richard Nixon, the book Wanted Search for the Nazis by Mr. Bloom goes into Nazis Live in America, but the most controversial is the one that goes into Richard Nixon's office and uses it as a dummy front in Whittier. Now, this last election, to show you how important these Vatican links are and how they can affect our Congress, there was an election in November, and Senator Charles Percy wanted the nomination. He's in Illinois. And he was pushed out of the seat by a gentleman named Michael Goland, G-O-L-A-N-D, from Los Angeles. And Goland moved to Illinois for 1 year and took up a residency and put in $1 million to defeat Percy. Now, this Goland has links to Israel, but the article on the fellow in Los Angeles Times, December the 5th, said, "A man who helped topple Senator Percy won't say why." Now, what happened when Senator Percy didn't win the election in November to go back to the Senate, he was in charge of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So by his being out of the Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Richard Lugar took the position. So somebody who has possibly worked with a Nazi war criminal, with taking money into Swiss banks from Madrid, who has ties to Nazis and to the Vatican, is in charge of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The overt purpose of this toppling of Mr. Goland, as I say, is that he is pro-Israel. But the story of his money seems to be secret, and the point is that somebody close to the Vatican might have wanted Lugar to be head of the Foreign Relations Committee. He's close to the ambassador that he wanted in. He pushed that, along with Robert Keith Gray, and he also in November got his promotion into the Senate. And I think it's significant the way our senators are soon to be moved out and bought, so that the liking of them, you know, whatever the Vatican or the CIA wants, unlimited money will pour $23 million into Jesse Helms in North Carolina. Money not identifiable from sources all over the world can come and push these men out until we get a Senate that is all of one mind, no controversy, and behind it all is the possibility of the Vatican movers of William Casey and the various agents, William Wilson, and people traveling back and forth as Knights of Malta. This book says, William Casey of the CIA and William Wilson were two people that told the Pope that about liberation theology, that it is, in quotes, the greatest danger the church faces in Latin America. Liberation theology is political activism of priests. It means to liberate you from the death squads of El Salvador, to liberate you from Somoza, to divide up the property, to feed the poor, educate them, and have a better land use. So the Central Intelligence Agency, through Casey and Wilson, say to the Pope, as if this Auschwitz Pope didn't know it, that is the greatest danger the church. In other words, you will suffer. Our CIA has told us that if you don't do something about liberation theology, your church, the Vatican, will suffer. So the chapter in this book goes on. The CIA, through their weekly briefings to the Pope, and both through that and the Knights of Malta, keep telling the Vatican of their strategy. And it's formulated earlier by the predecessor, Richard Helms, and they help the Vatican on how to combat clerical dissidents, as if the Vatican needs that help. But they're whispering or yelling into the Pope's ear. So that Casey, as a Knight of Malta, his excuse is, in quotes, He only has the good of the church in mind. Well, I don't know if the church in mind is what William Casey should have. There is the United States of America, and our interests may not be the same as the church. The church and the CIA are pushing inquisitions and crusades. And if you don't like the Spanish crusades in Madrid, or you don't know about them, get a few history books and look that up. $30 million last week was given by the intelligence community and the Defense Department to Mr. Pinochet in Chile, in spite of the repressions and the rounding up of 1,000 or 2,000 of the youth. And as I said last week, Mr. Daubuisson was honored last week for what he did in El Salvador, admitting that he did set up the death squads in El Salvador where there are 50,000 people dead. So why Mr. Casey thinks he has the church in mind, the good of the church in mind, somewhere along the line there should be brakes put on this, where we say, are the interests of the Catholic Church identical with the interests of the many people in the United States of America who don't approve of wiping out those middlemen, the priests, the nuns, the archbishops, who are trying to better the lives of the very poor people that they have to work with. Now, in the book, The Year of Armageddon, they tell about the briefing of the church do-gooders, the people who try to help the priests, and they snidely remark about them as do-gooders, and one of the examples is Father Romero down in El Salvador. The CIA trains and finances police forces in Latin America that have tortured, murdered bishops and archbishops, priests, and nuns. And these men are asking, Mr. Thomas and Morgan, how is it the Vatican goes along with that when members of their own church are being killed? Well, they're told that those people who were killed are enemies of the state because they have liberation theology. So there's no contradiction in being killed if you don't think like the people at home think, which is good for the Vatican. This book goes on. John Paul's Vatican envoy to Washington, D.C., P.O. Laghi, L-A-G-H-I, knows that the U.S. Institute for Religion and Democracy, the initials IRD, was established in 1981, 3 years ago, and has received funds from the American institutions previously acted as CIA monetary outlets. The Vatican knows that the CIA is already funding the Institute for Religion and Democracy and Mr. P.O. Laghi's work with that. And it goes on to say the IRD is currently engaged in a powerful campaign against church activists who do not agree with the Reagan administration or the policies in El Salvador or Latin America where they oppose the repressive regimes. So hand in hand, P.O. Laghi, and he is the Vatican envoy to our government. Now, the governments have exchanged ambassadors. He's the equivalent of the ambassador from the Vatican to Washington, D.C. Now, just a few weeks ago, November the 11th, 1984, in the London Times, there's a story about our ambassador from the Vatican, the current ambassador who gets these briefings and works with the Pope, Mr. P.O. Laghi. And the title of the article is Nuncio at Death Camp. This comes out of the London Times. It says, the Pope's envoy to Washington, Monsignor P.O. Laghi, has been accused of having toured a camp in 1976 set up by the ruling junta to murder left-wingers. Laghi, as a papal envoy to Argentina, before he was the envoy to the United States, he was down there in Argentina, kept silent the secret of these murders for 5 years. He was guarded. The camp is the Nueva Baviera camp in the Tucumán province. Newspapers of the time, this is going back to 1976, said that Laghi, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, say he lectures to the soldiers in the barracks who do the killings on the need to protect Argentina from the dangers of outside forces. He goes there, he's going there in 1976, and for 5 years, talking to the men, in case they had a conscience, on the necessity to protect Argentina, that they're endangered from an invasion of ideas, of foreign ideas. So Laghi was helping the men who tortured, and 30,000 people were murdered, which is, according to this article, a euphemism for they were missing, which is a euphemism for being murdered. Now, there 14 other bishops were named in the newspaper clippings going back to that time period. I guess they thought nobody would ever look this up, just as Alan Dulles thought nobody would read the Warren Commission exhibits and hearings. At least 14 other bishops and high-ranking clergy in Argentina were regular visitors to the death camp. One priest traveled to three camps to absolve the guilt of the torturers. The role of the priest there was to tell the torturers, it's all right, kids, because the worst thing that can happen to Argentina is to be endangered by an invasion of ideas. You can't have a new idea. So kill these people because they have maybe a new idea on how to go grow crops, how to divide the land, how to build shelters, low-cost housing. All of these are dangerous ideas, health care, or even changing the president. The president now, as a democracy, he's been trying to investigate the murders that took place in Argentina, and that's why these articles are coming out. The London Times said none of the priests, none of the Vatican, ever denounced the military junta's dirty tricks where these 30,000 disappeared. This information that just came out this last November, according to the London Times, has made the Vatican furious and has enraged the Vatican because the new president, Raul Alfonsin, has revealed the secret list of those who cooperated with the killings and the torture in the Vatican, and among them was the nuncio at the death camp, Pio Laggi, the current ambassador from the Vatican to Ronald Reagan. So you can imagine what he thinks on current Central American affairs after advising torturers and sure with the permission of the Pope that it's kosher and okay. One survivor of the death camps provide information in the London Times about this. He's living in Spain. He's afraid he'll be killed. He's gotten death threats. And he personally saw Mr. Laggi there. And in fact, he was interviewed by him or saw him in the prison, and he asked him, did your family know where you were? Because these people were taken away. And this is one fellow who was lucky enough to live. And he promised him, this Vatican envoy, that he'd call the family and say he saw him, which he never did. And in conclusion on this section on the Vatican and the CIA, these authors say the Pope is aware of both the CIA and their links with one of his favorite secret societies, the Opus Dei. The Pope knows that the CIA is linked to the Opus Dei. We might have figured this out with the kind of prominent people in there, but this is a time where it is reprinted in a book so you can see it. And it goes on to say the Opus Dei in Chile receives indirect financial support from the Central Intelligence Agency. The agency provides Opus Dei with evidence of Jesuits who challenged the papal pronouncement. Can you imagine anything so sickening or insidious as this? Going very slowly on this, I have a lot of material, but I can't think of anything worse. The CIA tells the Opus Dei of evidence of particular Jesuits who challenged the papal pronouncements or who were involved in political causes the CIA opposes. So in addition to snitching at all other levels, the Opus Dei is a group that functions for the Vatican as well as the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. It goes on, it was the CIA who suggested to John Paul that he should encourage the Opus Dei to begin working in Poland. One time it was revealed that the Pope gave Lech Walesa $50 million, and later there was sort of a scandal because there wasn't a trace of what the money went to, just for demonstrations. And in conclusion, it says the Vatican and the CIA will always reach each other through the church institutions. There is, besides the CIA, there's the Knights of Malta and the Opus Dei. Now, is there a solution to this? Yes. Cut off every public official who is appointed or nominated who has an allegiance to the Church of Rome. And only allow, if you're going to have Catholic people working for you, let them be good Catholics or Catholics and not the kind that promise they'll do the snitching and do the kind of work that the Opus Dei and the Knights of Malta are doing. Their obedience shouldn't always be to the Church of the Roman Empire. There are other things at stake here, and people have to learn to live along with each other. So, and the Vatican feels better dead than red. So they encourage the snitches, and then the pressure comes down, and these people lose jobs, lose homes, and are killed. A very dangerous situation, and Many of those names, every time they come up in the news in another format, I'll run them down again because they are prominent in decision-making policies right here in the United States. They affect the entire world. Now, another group of people that are just as dangerous as the Knights of Malta, and I have to slip this in before I get back to Mr. Wild Bill Donovan, are these private armies that are formed that are raising money on their own with the, in quotes, on their own, with the Defense Department, with the CIA. When Congress says we sent enough to those people, we have no record of what they do with it, or they're torturing, and there's too many death squads. When the elected members of 50 states are sent to Congress, and the congressmen vote on a certain issue, and goodness knows it's hard to get an agreement on that issue, if the certain persons affiliated with violence and killings and counter-espionage and guerrilla warfare don't like the decisions of the elected government, they go out on their own. And I have a large amount of articles piled up on just that fact. But the Washington Post had a very important story December the 10th, 1984, on this that epitomizes how insidious this is, and this is really the seeds. This is our Gestapo because it links to those same Christian fundamentalists that I talked about last week and the week before, the Nazis and Klans. There are direct connections of these people to the men in Idaho and to their national and international roots. Now, the title of the Washington Post story is Private Groups Press Contra Aid. The title says they press it. After you read the story, they've already given millions. It says they've raised millions. They have given out millions down to South America. This is the way the article goes. A network of conservative activists, of military and intelligence officials, including several members of a Pentagon advisory panel on Central America, have stepped up efforts to funnel money, private money, that they call humanitarian aid to the Nicaragua rebels. John Singlaub is one of those people in charge of this. Retired General John Singlaub, president of the World Anti-Communist League, raises $500,000 a month from wealthy citizens and groups since Congress cut off the back for the CIA funds. And I'm sure you've read this before, how they funding the Contras. John Singlaub works with the Nazis. He works out of Taiwan. He works with Reverend Moon and Mr. Sasakawa, with Pinochet in Chile, around the world. He's on the board of Western Goals that's still functioning and was part of that board when $100,000 was placed in Los Angeles to take documents on people who were law-abiding citizens in 1975 and in the 60s that were ordered destroyed and feeding them into these computers with that mysterious John Rees from London. And John Rees's wife, Louise, was on the staff of Senator Joe McCarthy. Their track record shows they're not on any humanitarian activities. And all of a sudden, their halo is so bright, you can hardly read the article because they want to send humanitarian material to these countries to protect the death squads in El Salvador and the torture there and to put the Somoza people back into power in Nicaragua. It says Singlaub has raised, as I say, $500,000 a month. Singlaub will do what the Defense Department wants, and the Defense Department does what Singlaub wants. And in this article, it melts the two. It says Singlaub and others have not only sent millions of dollars in uniforms, food, medicine, and other aid to Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, but the Defense Department has helped coordinate their aid. They're doing this, and as I say, it says because Congress cut off the money, the elected officials cut it off, the Defense Department works with them. Singlaub, who was recalled from South Korea by Jimmy Carter, formed a private institute to train police forces in El Salvador and possibly the Contras and soldiers if the United States government will not. That doesn't sound very humanitarian to me. He has an institute called the Institute for Regional and International Studies in Boulder, Colorado, which is run by Alexander McCall from Soldiers of Fortune. He's the military affairs editor of Soldiers of Fortune. And, of course, you get the Mr. Brown of Soldiers of Fortune with the Christian Defense League, the fringe area of the fight it out yourself. We'll go in and do it, cut them up and slice them up. If your government will let us, we have Soldiers of Fortune, Singlaub, and the Pentagon working together, debriefing and helping each other. We'll take a 1-minute break and get back to this story in about 1 minute.